Okay, Psalm 107. Psalm 107. Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for He is good. His steadfast love endures forever. Let the redeemed of the Lord say so, whom He has redeemed from trouble and gathered in the lands from the east and from the west, from the north and from the south. Some wandered in desert waste, finding no way to a city to dwell in. Hungry and thirsty, their soul fainted within them. Then they cried to the Lord in their trouble, and He delivered them from their distress. He led them by a straight way, till they reached a city to dwell in. Let them thank the Lord for His steadfast love, for His wondrous works to the children of man. For He satisfies the longing soul, and the hungry soul He fills with good things. Some sat in darkness and in the shadow of death, prisoners in affliction and irons, for they had rebelled against the words of God and spurned the counsel of the Most High. So He bowed their hearts down with hard labor. They fell down with none to help. Then they cried to the Lord in their trouble, and He delivered them from their distress. He brought them out of the darkness and the shadow of death and burst their bonds apart. Let them thank the Lord for His steadfast love, for His wondrous works to the children of man. For He shatters the doors of bronze and cuts in two the bars of iron. Some were fools through their sinful ways, because of their iniquities suffered affliction. They loathed any kind of food, and they drew near to the gates of death. Then they cried to the Lord in their trouble, and He delivered them from their distress. He sent out His word and healed them and delivered them from their destruction. Let them thank the Lord for His steadfast love, for His wondrous works to the children of man. And let them offer sacrifices of thanksgiving and tell of His deeds and songs of joy. Some went down to the sea in ships, doing business on the great waters. They saw the deeds of the Lord, His wondrous works in the deep. For He commanded and raised the stormy wind, which lifted up the waves of the sea. They mounted up to heaven. They went down to the depths. Their courage melted away in their evil plight. They reeled and staggered like drunken men and were at their wits' end. Then they cried to the Lord in their trouble, and He delivered them from their distress. He made the storm be still, and the waves of the sea were hushed. Then they were glad that the waters were quiet, and He brought them to their desired haven. Let them thank the Lord for His steadfast love, for His wondrous works to the children of man. Let them extol Him in the congregation of the people, and praise Him in the assembly of the elders. He turns rivers into a desert, springs of water into thirsty ground, a fruitful land into a salty waste, because of the evil of its inhabitants. He turns a desert into pools of water, a parched land into springs of water. And there He lets the hungry dwell, and they establish a city to live in. They sow fields and plant vineyards and get a fruitful yield. By His blessing they multiply greatly, and He does not let their livestock diminish. When they are diminished and brought low through oppression, evil, and sorrow, He pours contempt on princes and makes them wander in trackless wastes. But He raises up the needy out of affliction and makes their families like flocks. The upright see it and are glad, and all wickedness shuts its mouth. Whoever is wise, let him attend to these things. Let them consider the steadfast love of the Lord. All right, so we're going to kick Terry for us in Mark here. Mark chapter 1. Specifically, verses 39. Let's see here. No, wait a minute. Let's see here. 29 and 30, and then 40 through 45. So, just as a review, chapter 1 of Mark, we had a little introduction there about the prophecies concerning John the Baptist and his ministry related to the ministry of Jesus. the baptism of Jesus, the temptation time, the beginning of his ministry as he went out, began to proclaim what? That the kingdom of God was at hand, right? And calling of the first disciples, and then I believe Brandon did the unclean spirit. Didn't you touch on that?
Yeah.
And it may be a little overlap here. So what I'm going to do now is I want to start reading. I'm going to read 29. I'm going to skip a little bit here. No, I'll read 29 through 33, then 40 through 45. 29. And immediately he left the synagogue and entered the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. Now Simon's mother-in-law lay ill with a fever, and immediately they told him about her. And he came and took her by the hand and lifted her up, and the fever left her, and she began to serve them. That evening at sundown, they brought to him all who were sick or oppressed by demons. And the whole city was gathered together at the door. And he healed many who were sick with various diseases and cast out many demons. And he would not permit the demons to speak because they knew him. 40. And a leper came to him, imploring him and kneeling, said to him, "If you will, you can make me clean." Moved with pity, he stretched out his hand and he touched him and said to him, "I will be clean." And immediately the leprosy left him, and he was made clean. And Jesus sternly charged him and sent him away at once. He said to him, "See that you say nothing to anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer for your cleansing what Moses commanded for a proof to them." And that's where we'll stop. So what I want to talk about today is focus here a little bit on the aspects of Jesus' ministry. One of them was his healing that he brought. And I want to narrow that even further down to the physical healing that he brought. Because many times whenever he would cast a demon out, he would say that he healed them of the unclean spirit. And that's really not where I want to focus today. I want to talk about Jesus' ministry of physical healing that he did. And because it just jumped out to me. Remember Mark kind of divided into two big sections? He's got his teaching ministry section, like chapters 1 through 8-ish. And then it's got basically the Passion at the end there. The rest of the whole book's kind of like the Passion Week. And if you look at the time of Jesus' ministry time, every chapter except one has a recollection of a time he healed somebody. A physical healing. And in chapter 4 doesn't have one, but chapter 10 does, so it makes up chapter 4. So it's there, it's constant, it's consistent. It's not like he healed a few times and then he went off to something bigger and better. It was a consistent part of his ministry, physical healing. In fact, I'll tell you right quick. So we just looked at two of them. In chapter 2, Jesus heals the paralytic. That's the instance where the people took out the roof and let the guy down. Remember that one? In chapter 5, he heals the woman who touches him, and as he's walking down, and she just reaches out and touches him. And then right after that, he heals Jairus' daughter. That he says she's asleep. Remember that? Could be she was dead. I mean, it's not perfectly clear. Whichever way, he healed her, right? She needed healing. Then there is a general reference to him healing the sick in Gennesaret. In chapter 7, he heals a deaf man. And in chapter 10, there's the healing of blind Bartimaeus. So every chapter throughout there, there's a healing going on. Part of his ministry was the ministry of healing the body, okay? Which is very interesting to me because if you think about it, I don't know if you ever thought about this. The body that you have right now is not the body that you will have in about 8 years. Not one molecule of your body now will be the body that your soul inhabits in several years from now. Your body is constantly dying and being replaced. Even the internal parts of your body, cells die. You have cells that are designed to go get that dead cell and get rid of it. You get rid of it through natural processes, all kind of different ones, so that no one cell that you had when you were... Okay, we're all varying ages here. The point is that you're going to turn your body, your physicalness, you're constantly losing cells from your skin, your hair, along your GI tract, everywhere. Muscles are constantly being broken down and rebuilt. Your bones, I don't know if you knew this or not, you have two different types of cells that live in your bones. One of them is constantly tearing your bones down. The other one's constantly building your bones back up. It's a constant turnover. And that's the way God made you. So that's a really good remembrance that, so when we die, our bodies go in the ground and they become part of the earth again because that's where they came from, right? Adam was made from the dust of the ground. This right here that you can feel, that you can see, is not you. It won't be you in 10 years. The real you is what's your spirit that's inside, that's inhabiting this body. And yet, Jesus was interested in healing something that was going to go pass away. Okay? So, which brings up the idea of healing. Because your body is in a constant state of destruction. Now, we're designed by God so that the destruction is delayed for a long time. But you're in a constant state of actually dying and being repaired, dying and being repaired, dying and being repaired. At some point, in God's providence, when you're young, you got more repair going on than dying. That's called growth. You're going to enter a stage where you got about a balance going on. You're not really growing. You're kind of maintaining a status quo. But then you're going to hit an age, everybody hits at different times of their life, when you're going to have more destruction going on than healing. More destruction than repair. And that's the tapering off of our lives, which God has already set for us, right? Now, so when we say, when you get sick and you go to the doctor, does the doctor heal you? No, the doctor doesn't heal you. When you get sick and you take some medicine yourself, did you heal you? No. Healing is something only that the body can do of itself. When Brandon had his brain tumor, the only thing that the doctors did was damage him. Okay? Really? They shaved his hair off, and that was destructive. What little there was there. They took a knife and they cut his skin. Then they took a saw and they sawed his bone and took a chunk of it out so they could get what they needed. That's all destructive. Then they went in there and they found this little piece that wasn't supposed to be there, and they cut it out and took it out. And then they kind of put the stuff back together, but they didn't heal it. His body had to do the healing. Okay? So, I had a wise professor when we were in school. This was like freshman year when we all thought we were like, oh, God's gift to medicine. And he said, I'm going to bring you down to earth. He said, 10% of the time, 10% of the time, you're actually going to make something better. Something that you do is actually going to be the thing that get something better by 10% of the time. He said, 10% of the time, you're actually going to do something that makes it worse. That's all that Hippocratic Oath thing, do no harm. You know, that's why that's important. He said, 80% of the time, it's going to get better anyway, no matter what you do. See, so he was like reminding us that the healing's going on. And we had to be careful not to get in the way of the healing process. And so when we try to attempt healing, all we can do is promote healing. That's what we can do. But when Jesus heals, it's a different story. Okay? So let's look at the... So Mark here, obviously, we're looking at New Testament. We're looking at, you know, that time frame. But what about an Old Testament? What about healing in the Old Testament? Was healing in the Old Testament? Sure there was. This was, you know, there was. I just picked out three. I'm not going to get into the Job, but Job, there's a lot of healing that happened in Job. Remember that? I'm not going to get into all the specifics in Job. But, you know, Job was afflicted, and then he was healed. That's the short version of Job, right? Naaman. Does anybody remember Naaman? Remember who Naaman was? Who can tell me who Naaman was? Anybody? What, TJ? Who was Naaman? Huh? Syrian? I think so. Right. 2 Kings chapter 5, Naaman. Naaman had leprosy. And y'all remember what happened there? I'm going to remind you, because I want you to sort of think, I'm going to start seeing these contexts there, this healing is going on. Very interesting. I'm not going to like get too much into it. We could talk for an hour about Naaman. But here's three things I thought were really interesting about the whole healing. Naaman is healed. How is Naaman healed? He's healed by the power of God, okay? So Naaman is healed, and God... You know what God does to accomplish this? First of all, He sends the Syrian army to attack Israel and take a little girl captive into slavery. Okay? He did that on purpose. And because He needed that little girl there to tell Naaman about the prophet Elisha. I think it was Elisha. I could be wrong, but it could be Elijah. Elisha, that's right. So he goes. So this mighty commander says, she says, "Well, I wish you could go to Israel because there's a guy there that'll kill you." And he's like, "Really?" So he goes down to Israel, and he goes to the king, and he says, "I got a letter from my king. Says you can heal me." And he's like, and the king's like, "Oh, I can't do this. What am I talking about?" Elisha finds him and says, "Why are you upset? Tell him to come see me." So he goes to see Elisha. Elijah does, you know what Elisha does? He doesn't even answer the door. A servant comes out. Now, think about this. A slave girl told him in the first place. Now a servant comes out and tells him, "What? Go to the Jordan, wash 7 times, you'll be healed." And so he says, "No, that's simple enough. I'll just go do it, right?" No. He is mad. Why is he mad? What's been hurt?
Because he wanted it to come out and be all about him, smiting them or making it the leprosy go away.
He was prideful, wasn't he? Yeah. He was angry and prideful. And in spite of that, God has mercy on him and has another servant who says, "This isn't really hard. You know, you could just go try it out. It's very kind of pretty easy to do this." So Naaman's like, "I can just see him going, all right, well, I might as well. I'm here. I went all this way to Israel. The river is not as good as my river, but what the heck, I might as well do it." And then in spite of that, we don't know that he had that bad attitude. At one point, we know he had a bad attitude. I mean, he was like, he won't even come out and see me. He sends a servant out. So at one point, we know he had a bad attitude. But then God still has mercy on him, and He goes and does it, and God heals him. Okay? So, okay, keep these in mind. Keep these in mind. Then there's another one. I'm going to pick another one. Hezekiah. Remember King Hezekiah? That's in 2 Kings chapter 20. Hezekiah. Anybody remember Hezekiah? Was he a good king or a bad king? Gotta let the kids answer these questions, man. He was a king that did right in the sight of God. He was one of the good guys. Okay. So Hezekiah is ill. In fact, he's got boils on him, because we know that because part of the getting better was to do something to his boils. He's ill in bed, and the prophet Elisha, I think it's Elisha again. Isaiah. The prophet Isaiah comes to him. Now, Isaiah's got, he's known. He ain't like some little, didn't even make the minor prophets kind of, didn't even make the minor leagues kind of thing. He's a major league prophet. Isaiah comes to him and says, what's he say? Oh, you'll be okay. Is that what he says?
Get ready to die.
He says, there you're dead. You're dead meat. He says, you're going to die. I have word from the Lord. You're going to die. Prepare. I'm just thinking that if I got a word from the Lord from a known major prophet, okay, God, whatever. It's over. Instead, Hezekiah is induced, I think, got to be by the Spirit of God, to pray and ask God to relent and to give him more life. And God answers this prayer and chooses to heal him for a time. Because all physical healing is only for a time. Until the final, when we have new bodies, which will not decay. So there's three examples, Old Testament healing. So think about, keep those in mind. Keep the circumstances in mind. Anybody else can think of an Old Testament healing example? Well, no, I wasn't thinking about Elijah and the boy, the mother's boy. I guess you could consider that a healing. Was it Elisha?
No.
I get my prophets all messed up. Two different ones, wasn't it? See, that's why I was right. Any other ones? I think those are the major ones.
That could be
considered healing. It could be. But, so okay, I want y'all to remember, think about that. You got another one? Yeah, they made the bronze snake and held it up, and everybody looked at it, got better. Right? Okay, that was a healing. Right. Okay, so keep that in mind. When you see a biblical healing, keep the circumstances in mind, because we're gonna see some more here in Mark. Okay. But before we go there, what I want to do is I want to talk about, we get sick. We physically get ill, or we wouldn't need healing, right? And why? Why does that happen? Is it just random? Is it just like, just because? Is that the reason why? Just because? Or is there something we can gain from Scripture that gives us some idea about, some perspective on when we're ill, when we get sick? Why is this going on? I think there is. Number one, we could be experiencing a trial given to us by God. Obviously, we are experiencing a trial given to us by God, but it could be specifically for us. It could actually be a trial that we're going to go through for somebody else's benefit. But it is a trial, and it is from God. So we can take comfort in the fact that this is not just willy-nilly. Okay? And the classic example for that is Job being right, he was a righteous man. So we're not talking about a trial because of sin. which could also be another reason. It's not always a reason, so you can't be like Job's friends and say, what'd you do to somebody who gets sick, right? So it could be a trial because, like Job, in the sense that God says, God stricken Job for a purpose and a plan, and it was not only for Job, but it was also for his friends to learn from. And that's the thing about God. He's pretty economic in the way he does things. He typically is going to accomplish a lot of things by just one thing. So, biblically speaking, your sickness is for a purpose. It's for a reason. It's not arbitrary. It's not just out there just because God likes to see you suffer. Okay? And it's not. If you're an atheist, then your sickness has no purpose, and you're just going to suffer for suffering's sake, and that is hopeless. So we don't have a hopeless faith. Okay. Number two, sickness is a result of the curse. That because sickness is a temporary death. It's a temporary death and resurrection event in your life. You're getting sick, you're in the dying phase, and then you are resurrected in a sense. So it's a death-resurrection cycle that goes on in your life. You can think of it that way. It'll help you out. So the curse was, if you eat it, you shall what? Surely die. Right? So sickness is a part of the curse that we endure. In the new bodies, don't believe there will be any sickness. On the other side of this mortal life we live. So, also, again, I would consider this as part of the curse. Sicknesses can be a spiritual attack. And since, again, I go to Job. And God was in control of that, right? Let's don't forget that. But God said, yes, Satan, you may afflict him. And so it was part of a spiritual attack on Job that God already had planned out because he knew that Job, and he knew the grace he was going to give Job, and he knew that Job, you know, what the end was going to be. But it was a spiritual attack. But just remember, all spiritual attacks are under the control of God. God has his leash on Satan in everything that he does. So all spiritual attacks, and that's why God can say, I will what? I will put nothing on you that what? I will also not give you a way of escape and give you what? The grace to go through. So just remember, when all feels like it's falling apart, that's a promise you have. It's a promise in the Scriptures. And so sicknesses can be, not always are, a spiritual attack on you. Okay. There's also a sickness unto death, the Bible says. I'm going to read John 11 to you. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it's starting with verse 1. It says, now a certain man was ill. He was sick. Lazarus of Bethany. If anybody remember Lazarus of Bethany? Not you. Who can tell me what happened with Lazarus of Bethany?
He was dead, and they wrapped him and put him in a tomb. And 3 days later, Jesus came, and he called him, and he woke up, and he came out.
Okay, now listen to what Jesus says about that. Certain man was ill, so he wasn't just walking along, and boom, he was dead. That wasn't how it happened. He was ill for several days. The village, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. It was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair. Her brother Lazarus was ill. He was sick. So the sister sent to Jesus, saying, Lord, he whom you love is ill. But when Jesus heard it, he said, so Jesus wasn't there. They sent a messenger. Jesus said, this illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. Were you saying Jesus was wrong? Jesus was right, you were right too. Jesus is sitting there. He says, this is not an illness that leads to death. Yet we know that Lazarus died. Well, first of all, just to say this, apparently there are illnesses that lead to death. In this case, Jesus knew ahead what he was planning to do. He knew that he was going to go and he was going to resurrect Lazarus. And that's where I get this idea, and I think it's supportive of the fact that all illnesses are a death-resurrection cycle situation. See, our bodies are... Remember, you've got to remember, your body is not who you are. You are not this physicalness. You are beyond the physicalness. And Jesus knew that. And He knew that physicalness can go away, or it can die, it can cease to work. But Lazarus is not dead. Lazarus, the essence of Lazarus did not die. The only time that the essence of you dies is when you don't have Christ in you. And that death is eternal death. And so, in this sense, Jesus was like, Lazarus is not going to die. His body is going to die for just a day or for about 4 days, and I'm going to resurrect. I'm going to make that body work again. Lazarus is going to be back. So the different, the Bible speaks of. The point is that when we think of illnesses, it's when you're in the midst of it, it's the most difficult time. But think about, if you can, if you gain confidence from there's a purpose for my illness. God's got my illness under control. It's a good time to be reflective. Is there, because we're going to read in a minute about, the leper here, it's insinuated there was a sin that brought his leprosy upon him. And so you can think, it's a good time to be introspective about yourself. But you can't be like the people who said about the tower, what sin did they do that made the tower fall on them? And Jesus said, it was no sin of theirs. And the same thing is about our illnesses. It does not necessarily mean that there's a sin that in your life is the reason. When bad things happen to you, it's not necessarily because God's trying to get you for not doing the right thing. Okay? So you can, as you go through the trials of sickness and illnesses, think about it biblically. The Bible has things to say about it. Anybody have anything they want to say or comment before I move on?
The idea that sickness does not have to be about sin. I may not look at your sickness. It would be improper for me to look at your sickness and to say, that's something going on, that's why you got sick. On the flip side, for me, between me and Jesus, I should be saying, why has this come? And I should be introspective, repentant, humble, to acknowledge that there could be sin in my life, and that is why one of the purposes that it has been brought into my life. So that it is not that we don't acknowledge sin, so that we don't say, well, sickness just got, God just brought this sickness to me. It has nothing to do with my life. It's just that God's going to work something out. But I should be open to the idea that, well, it is between me and God that, hey, there's a chance that this really is corrective, not just instructive.
Sure. That's part of working out your salvation.
Absolutely. I would think, too, whenever we need to contemplate that, like you said, we need to always be reminded of sin, even if it's not directly. I was seeing God dealing with it. Is a picture of what sin brings. That's what you're saying. It's an imperfection. It's a picture of our moral imperfection led to the fall. Now we don't have that perfection, and we're trying to heal. God is demonstrating what we can do
to do. Our body's trying to heal itself. It does a little, it can't complete the job. But there's somebody that's going to complete the job. You know? He's teaching us through that.
Amen. Okay, so my next question would be, why was healing such a big part of Jesus' ministry? Why not something else? I mean, he could have come to do something else, though. So, well, for number one, and to go along that line, it was a fulfillment of prophecy. It was a way of, because I'm going to read you three different prophecies, all of them in Isaiah. Is that why you knew that? In the day, it says, Isaiah 29:18 says, in that day, speaking of the day of the Messiah, as it comes, in that day the deaf shall hear the words of a book, and out of their gloom and darkness the eyes of the blind shall see. It's the prophecies that the Messiah, there will be healing in the days of the Messiah. And not just healing that usually occurs, like you get the flu, you usually get better from that. You have a minor cut, you usually heal up from that. This was stuff that you usually don't recover from. Being deaf, you don't usually become undeaf. Being blind, you don't usually have your sight restored. So this was a sign of sorts to be able to recognize who the Messiah was. Okay? Another one, and these are all kind of all in the same vein, Isaiah 35:4-6. Say to those who have an anxious heart, be strong, fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance. With the recompense of God, He will come and save you. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, the ears of the deaf unstopped. Then shall the lame man leap like a deer, and the tongue of the mute sing for joy. Okay? So, one reason that healing was part of Jesus' ministry was to fulfill the prophetic scriptures that had been spoken of Him. Another reason was for Him to have a way to show His compassion for us. It was an opportunity for God to show us His compassion. And we read just a minute ago about the leper. The leper came to Him, and Jesus was what? He was moved with pity. He had compassion on him. He was giving us an example as He came in His humanity. That's how we get it. That's how we can relate, because of Jesus' humanity. He's all man and all God. And in His humanity, He showed part of His eternal character, and that is He is compassionate. He gave us an example for us to be compassionate to others in their time of need. But He was compassionate. He also, besides show His compassion, He also gave us an example of how we should minister to others. I'll read you something from James. I believe it's James here. I didn't write down the reference. I think it's James 2. It says, what good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can that faith save him? If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, be warm and filled, without giving them the things needed for the body, what good is that? So faith by itself, if it does not have works, is also no good or dead. And so, this is what I see Jesus doing. It would have been fine. I mean, if anybody could do it, Jesus could have been the one to say, you're going to be just fine. I'm not going to change your affliction, but you're going to be just fine. If anybody could say that, it was Jesus, right? Because He knew what the purpose in the end was. Instead, not only did he do that, not only did he support through his words, through his teaching, and that sort of thing, he not only gave hope, he also provided the actual physical needs that the person had. So it's a reminder to us, along with, I think, I'm pretty sure this is James too, to when you see a need, you can be an arm of Jesus, he says, like when you go and you provide to drink your brother needs, you're doing it as I would have done. You're being an arm of mine. You're being a foot of mine as you go and you do things and you're helping the brothers. So this was he did it as an example. Obviously, we can't go and actually physically heal somebody. We talked about that already. But we can go and we can what? We can help. We can help supply needs, etc. Anybody have anything to add to that?
Another reason why the healing ministry Jesus could have been or was or important would be that it typifies healing of the heart and as the ultimate act. I don't know if you're going there.
Yep.
It just occurred to me it may be significant that Jesus not only felt compassion and not only willed for him to be healed, but he did something that was forbidden. He touched him. He touched the leper. And that would have made him, according to the law, ceremonially unclean, if I understand correctly. So he went a step beyond what anybody would have been willing to do. And he didn't have to, but he touched him, and I think that it's a lesson for us that, you know, he was fully involved. I mean, were he not God, which we know he was, he was putting his life in danger. I mean, he did more than what was required at the time. And I think that's significant that he did. He actually reached out and touched him. And I don't know.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a good point. And that's a good transition to the next thing, which I want to talk about is, how did Jesus heal? So I'm going to let's look at these instances in the book of Mark right quick. And I'm just going to, like, burn through them real fast, okay? Yeah, Mark. We just read about these two in Mark 1. Simon's mother-in-law, it says he took her by the hand and lifted her up. And in another gospel, it says he rebuked the fever. Okay? So that's in one of the other synoptics. I can't remember. I think it's Luke. Yes, Luke right here. Luke 4 says he rebuked the fever. Okay? So Simon's mom, what did he do? Rebuked the fever. Okay? To the leper. Yes, he touched him, but he also did what? He said, I will be clean. Meaning, I do will this. Because the leper asked him and said, you know, he said, hey, if you want to, you can do this. And so he said, I want to. And he said, be clean. Chapter 2, the paralytic. He heals him by doing what? He says, I say to you, rise up, pick up your bed, and walk. And the man was healed. The man with the withered hand, Jesus says to him, stretch out your hand. In chapter 5, the woman touches him, and then Jesus says to her, go in peace, be healed of your disease. The Jairus' daughter, he does take her by the hand, but then he says to her, little girl, I say to you, arise. Chapter 6, he's healing in Gennesaret. And in there, it says as many of them as touched it, meaning, I think the hem of a garment there, fringes of his garment, were made well. Okay, And in 7, the deaf man, he does a few things. He kind of pokes his fingers in his ears and stuff. And then it's interesting to me that he says, and looking up to heaven, he sighed and said to him, "Be opened." I find it interesting that it says there he sighed. I take from that kind of the same. It reminds me of when he's like up on the mountain looking at Jerusalem, and he's like, it's like, if you only would believe. Remember, he's on the way. He says, if you only would believe, how I would have liked to be like a hen, brought you under my wings. And I think I get the same feeling from here, where he's done a couple of things and he's thinking, this guy still doesn't believe. See, the people who went up and touched his fringe, they had faith to do it. This guy, Jesus is even doing things to him and he still doesn't have faith. So Jesus then has to say, be healed. And Luke 7 is, So, what did you see that was recurrent here in all these instances? And actually, if you look carefully, they're in the Old Testament examples as well. Jesus heals by not some magic potion or some little dance he does or something that he does physically. He heals by what? The power of his word. That's where I'm kind of going to when I say doctors don't heal. But Jesus really does heal. And he heals by the power of his word, because what created you in the first place? The word of God did. The same thing that created you in the first place can recreate you. And that's true, complete healing. Every instance here, there wasn't like they kind of got better and they needed a few days to recuperate. They were better immediately. Simon's mother had a fever, and it's implied it wasn't like I'm just going to kind of feel good today. I got a little low-grade temp. This was like she'd been in bed, fever, that could have killed her. And he comes, he said, be healed, and she immediately is completely better. All her energy is restored. She's able to just immediately go and start serving. Okay, so you ladies know that ain't like, if you've been at the flu, it takes you a few days to get back on your feet. All these people, the person who's blind, it wasn't like they were like, oh, I can kind of see a little bit. They were completely, the lame man did what? Limped away? Oh, I can walk now? I need a few weeks of physical therapy so I can actually get my muscles back? No. And by the way, if you've not been using your legs for like 20 years, you don't have any muscles, by the way. Guess what you need to be able to walk again? You need like some muscles created out of thin air, which only God can do for you. Or he wouldn't have been walking and leaping and praising God. He would have been barely limping, needing a cane. Right? Okay. So, when Jesus heals, he does it by the power of creation. Let that sink into you. We are experiencing a winding down of the creative power in our lives as we go through our lives. Jesus heals by the power, the same power that created everything from nothing. The same power that made the fish and the loaves to feed everybody. The same power that put the life back into the little boy or Lazarus. The same power that resurrected on the third day. What's our role in this? What's our role? We'll read you another healing story. It should make you weep. Makes me weep. In fact, I'm going to read more than I have in here. Luke chapter 7. After he had finished all his sayings in the hearing of the people, he entered Capernaum. Now a centurion had a servant who was sick and at the point of death, who was highly valued by him. When the centurion heard about Jesus, he sent to him elders of the Jews, asking him to come and heal his servant. And when they came to Jesus, and they pleaded with him earnestly, saying, "He is worthy to have you do this for him, for he loves our nation, and he is the one who built us our synagogue." Jesus went with them. When he was not far from the house, the centurion sent friends, saying to him, "Lord, do not trouble yourself, for I am not worthy to have you come under my roof. Therefore, I did not presume to come to you." Listen. "But say the word, and let my servant be healed. For I too am a man set under authority, with soldiers under me, under my authority. I say to one of them, 'Go,' and he goes. And I say to another, 'Come,' and he comes. And to my servant, I say, 'Do this,' and he does it." Do you know what he's saying there? He's saying, "I believe that you have authority over this, over life. And I believe your authority is so powerful that you don't have to be here. You just got to like want it to happen, and it'll happen." And then Jesus marveled at him. Can you imagine if you could do something that made Jesus marvel, make the Son of God marvel at you? The only thing that you could do is what? Same thing this man did. Expressed faith. He reflected the glory of God in his faith. He said, "All you have to do is say the word." Now look, he didn't have the scriptures. He had the Old Testament scriptures. I don't know if he could have read them. He built a synagogue. He had the scriptures that they had. He didn't know about all these other healings. He couldn't go there and see the pattern of Jesus spoke and they were healed. Jesus spoke and he didn't have that. All he had was the faith that God gave him. Our role is simply to have faith and believe. You say that you believe that God created the world. If he can do that, what can he not do? Our job is to believe. Our job is simply to believe that God can do it if he wants to do it, and then be content in what his will is for us. So let's go back to the leper here right quick. And let's look, I'm going to sort of... What does the leper healing, the healing of the leper, what can it teach us? Number one, it can teach us how we are to apply ourselves to Christ. We are to come as the leper came. The leper came with, first of all, humility. Come to God in humbleness being willing to submit to whatever He says. Think about this centurion again. The centurion said to somebody, go do that. And because of his authority, he expected and he would get response of submission to his authority. Anybody here struggle with that? If we recognize the authority of Christ in our life, then not only should we recognize all the sub-authorities that He has instilled, but we also recognize that we are instruments in His hands to do what as He pleases. And He's not. And if we have faith, and if we believe, and we can trust Him, we should be able to trust Him and say, okay, this is good. So I was saying this morning, all those hydraulic hoses that busted, those were good. Those were good. It was good to happen. Number two, like the leper, we need to believe in His power. If He created the world, why can He not create our bodies again so they're healed? But we need to believe in specifics. We don't need to just believe in generalities. We need to believe that He specifically can do this if He wants to, if it's His will. And we need to believe that He can specifically do it for us if He wants to. Yes, He does things on a creative, universal plane, but He also does it on an individual basis. He knows all the billions and trillions of lives that have been and will be. He knows all whatever superlative is beyond billions and trillions and Googleplexes and of atoms in the universe. And He knows how they all fit together. And He knows as He weaves a tapestry of creation and of history, He knows what it's all going to look like in the end. I mean, think about it like this. The tapestry is as large as the solar system, and you are one little tiny piece of a thread in it. But He cares about that little tiny piece of the tapestry. And He can change that however He wants. So the leper came with humility, with belief in the power that God could do this. And he came submitting. He said, what? If you want to. Which implied, if you don't want to, it's okay. So that teaches that we can learn how we are to approach, apply ourselves in these situations. Number two, we can learn what to expect from God, from Christ, when we go to Him in that way. Right? In that way. We've already spoken to these. We can expect compassion from our Savior. We can expect Him to do all His holy will. And we can expect it to come through His Word. And after we experience the power of God, because He chose to, in His will, to touch us, what do we do? What then do we do? Well, we shouldn't just receive the good Let me say that differently. We shouldn't just receive His benefits without also being completely submissive to His commands. It should make us desire more to do the will of God. To say, and it may be to say, I may not have been doing the right thing, right? God has been merciful to me. Let me make sure. Let me go back and let me study some more to be sure that I understand what God's will is in His Word. Understand what His law is for my life. Understand how I'm supposed to be applying it. Work harder to understand those things. And then when I know them better, apply them. Sinless. Right? Not sinless, but sinless. So there's a lot we can learn, even from this one aspect of Jesus' healing ministry. But in general, the healing ministry should be is a proclamation of the power of God. And as we see it, it reminds us of the promises that He made and that He kept, right? And that our Savior is powerful enough to accomplish all His mighty will.